Welcome back to your Noise Avocation Podcast. I'm Ryan here with Jeremy.
How's everybody doing tonight?
That was Wasting Away by Anti-Ghost off their latest record, All My Friends Dig Graves. We have Dylan and Sean from the band to talk with them about their record and upcoming shows, etc. We'll get into that in a minute, but before we do, as always, check out Blastbeats Vinyl. Use our promo code NOISE for 10% off your first order. They've been dropping a ton of awesome stuff. Some exclusives, new metal, old metal, reissues, hard to find, stuff like Nightingales, the new Dark Throne, some really cool Cattle Decapitation reissues, all sorts of shit. Go to their website. It's in our episode description. Check them out. Otherwise, enjoy the interview. Dylan and Sean, thank you guys for jumping on the show. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Two parts of Anti-Ghost. Is it anti or anti? I guess it would be either way, really.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of say it however you want, and it really just depends on where you're from and which way you hear it first. But it's really just, I mean, we don't prefer it one way or the other.
Yeah, we don't really care.
If you were to say it, what would you say? Because would you say anti?
I would say anti.
You'd say anti. See, I'd say anti.
Would be A-N-T-E to me.
I'd be like anti-ghost. Anti-ghost. Anti-ghost.
Yeah.
Michigan? Yeah, this is totally complicated now.
Yeah, I think if I'm being if you really like stick the tie, like anti-ghost.
Yeah.
But I feel like usually I'm just casually saying like anti-ghost, but
I'm not anti-ghost. I believe that there's a ghost, so like anti-ghost sounds like different. I don't know. Yeah. Or we can be like, you know that band that put out All My Friends Dig Graves? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So is there a story behind how you guys came up with the name, or did you just have that like in your back pocket and decided to run with it?
I went through I had a laundry list of band names. Like when I was first starting the project, and I think Anti-Ghost was just the one that seemed like the best choice to me as far as like branding. It's one word. At the time, like, it made the most sense to start with an A because it like would be at the top of like iTunes and stuff way back when iTunes was a thing.
Yeah.
So
I mean, even now it'd still be at the top of Apple Music and whatever you're streaming on, or if it's in your library. So but yeah, I've actually I wonder how many people really take that into consideration. Like, if you're a band that has an S name, because S is the most common letter, I would say, for records in general. I wonder how many bands like take it into consideration, like where they're going to fall in an alphabetical lineup, like online.
Well, so many people just don't do like just like a prerequisite Google search to see if something's taken. And that was something I really wanted to make sure. I was like, I don't want to get like, you know, a year or two into this project and then find out that there's like all these different companies that are also using like the same imagery and stuff. And like when we first started, we used a lot of ghosts and like just like graphic tees and like promotion and stuff. And we've kind of moved away from that to try and differentiate ourselves. Cause I feel like there's ghosts on like everything nowadays. So,
right.
Yeah. It just kind of made sense.
Yeah. It'd make kind of come up with your own thing over time and just let it evolve into what it's going to be.
Yeah.
When did you guys start the band? And actually, before I get into that, so Dylan, you sing, correct?
No, Sean is the singer. I'm the drummer.
It up. I had a backwards. <It's all good. laughs> I just wanted to have that stated just so people know who's what in the band.
Yeah. So Sean is the singer, guitarist, and primary songwriter. I play drums, and then we have a third member, Andrew, who plays bass.
Okay, cool.
I congratulate you guys on pulling off the trio thing because that shit's hard, man. And to make it sound like as full as you guys do, it's pretty good.
Well, thank you.
I mean, usually, like anytime I was ever in a band, it's always like get another guitar player, get another, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, so, we've always had that discussion of, you know, like adding another guitar player or, you know, doing something like that, but I think it's just we've always felt the best as a three-piece, and in all honesty, like, it makes everything a lot easier, like traveling, booking, like,
schedule-wise,
all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's nicer to just have three people. It's all you have to worry about. And
well, that, and you don't have to, like, split your take more ways at a show, because I'm sure they, like, most venues don't pay bands accordingly to how many members they are. They're just like, you got this set rate and you can figure it out amongst yourselves.
Oh, dude, if it was that way, would everybody be in ska bands and shit?
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, I think
11 people to every band and be like,
yeah, we'd have a trumpet player, someone on the triangle, tambourine player.
Every band would be Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah. We need a whole
lineage of members.
But I'm just imagining, like, Slipknot just like getting paid like $100 and like, all right, we got to split it 11 ways.
Yeah, that's brutal. What I'm saying. Like, I mean, it had to be really rough for them in the beginning of shows to where they're like, and, you know, there could always be like, who gets the money first? So he's like, oh, I'm going to take this amount. Like, Corey Taylor's probably like, well, I'm Corey Taylor,
well,
so
yeah,
I'm taking fucking
30%. So.
But yeah, dude, you play the baseball bat. Like, I'm not gonna you don't get a big cut.
Yeah, like the guy that bangs on kegs, they're like, really, you're not all that important. Like, we'll give you
6%. One of two guys that bangs on kegs. I don't know. I feel like we were always really smart, like, from the beginning. I think our first like few tours we would like pay ourselves. And, you know, we made like a decent amount of money, and it'd be like, cool, like, we each made like $30 a night, or, you know, we, like, after we fill up the tank, everybody can like get Taco Bell on the way home. But over the years, we started an LLC and have just been putting all of our money into the bank. And then, like, when it comes time to like buy a van or a trailer or record or shoot a video or something, we don't have to pay out of pockets for ourselves. So it's just that way has worked out a lot better. And like, I don't know, if we all like took a cut after every show, I feel like we would all probably just, it wouldn't add up to like what we would end up spending on the band in like at a later date. So it's just been what works for us. So with three guys, it's kind of nice.
Yeah. It'd be hard, you know, if you got like all right, I made $500, man. I can just take like maybe like two of this and throw it over here, and then pretty soon it's like nothing's going back into the band. That totally happened.
Yeah,
that's actually
no. It's nice, like smart to like do a giant merch order or something. You know, the funds are there instead of having to be like, all right, everyone pitch in $150, and then
yeah, and you got somebody like scrounging up like quarters like, and paying you yeah, like dude. Rolls of dimes and stuff.
I got this bag of cans.
Odin, we need to get a hotel room. It's nice when instead of being like, okay, everybody like pitch in $40, we can just be like, ah, we'll put it on the band card, and yeah. that way we all have like yeah. a bed and a shower and stuff. So
you know, you're the first that's band that's at least that's admitted to that. That, they do or that. Do, yeah. Yeah, that's smart. Smart. Very, very smart.
I mean, you're definitely probably not the only people that do it. Like for sure, I'm sure they're like huge bands do that shit all the time, but just like. Smaller like indie bands, they don't think to do stuff like that.
I think like, I could see the Stray Cats like hanging out together back in the day like that. It's three piece.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
So how long have you guys been doing Anti-Ghost?
I've been writing songs all my life, but I think like when I got to college, I went to film school and pretty quickly realized that like doing the whole film thing would be just as difficult as like doing the music thing, whatever making it is in either of those industries. So I was just like, screw it. I'm just going to go all in and like pursue my passion. So I put together some songs in 2016 and recorded them and put out an album. And I kind of did it backwards. I put the record out so I could find band members instead of like having a bunch of people try out for something where they wouldn't know what it sounded like. I wanted to like get the music out and then see who had interest in it. So I actually took out a Craigslist ad, and that's how I met Dylan. And then we kind of had a rotating door of bassists over the years. So like our first release was 2016. I like to think we've been an active band since probably about like 2017. And I would say like 2018, 2019 is probably when we got like professional with it.
Was your first release a whole album or was it just an EP?
It was an EP. It was six songs called Wolves and Sheep.
Okay.
And that was, I'm sorry, but did you say that that was with you only, or is that with a whole band?
Yeah, that was just me. Okay. So I wrote the material and took it to the studio, and then we programmed the drums for it. I played guitar and sang, and then like me and my producer Mark Stewart, who owns and operates Radon Studio in Keego Harbor, he was recording it. And at the time, we kind of just like shared the bass parts together.
Oh, that's great.
Honestly,
I'll have to check that out. It's a good way to find it.
You said that you were doing film too. Do you do you guys' music videos by chance then with that background?
Yeah, I've been super fortunate because like in film school there was a lot of people who wanted to work for free just to get, you know, some like a credit that they could use to try to get roles in the future. So I had a lot of really talented filmmaker friends who would offer up doing music videos. And I would play a pretty big creative role in them. Like we would usually work like together and like co-direct. So I got to work with like Talon Rudel, TJ Lloyds, and this most recent video we put out, my good friend Karsten, who co-directed and filmed the whole thing. So it's been cool because like I feel like there's a lot of the arts kind of intersect with one another, and film and music definitely do so a lot.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I watched that. We both watched that video today. Now before I watched it, because you guys just put that out yesterday, correct?
Yeah.
You know, from not hitting the button, I'm like, man, it's just going to be like another. They're just going to stand there and fucking play. And then it's like, holy shit, man. It's like a legit like MTV style video. And it sounds good. And you have like 67 other videos on your YouTube channel. So how many videos have you actually made as far as like music videos?
Well, thank you for saying those kind words. We appreciate it. I think we have probably like 7 or 8 music videos and then a handful of like lyric videos that like friends have made that we've showcased. You're gonna look it up.
Yeah
like
it's kind of hard to remember.
We were working on, I think we can talk about this now because it's supposed to come out soon because we just signed the last paperwork, but we were in a film I don't know the name of it. I won't give away like any actors or directors, but we were asked to be in a film that shot out in Kalamazoo, gosh, like 4 years ago at this point.
Holy shit.
2019, yeah.
2019, yeah. So like 4 years ago. And we just got like the last contract to sign. So I think it's actually going to come out. I don't know where, but.
Quick interjection. We have
seven videos
that we've made, and then the eighth one is the one that I'm assuming you're
referencing. One talent made by himself in California. So, we were working on this film, and one of the guys from the film crew came and was just like, hey, we shot a bunch of just stuff of this actor walking around the city and stuff. Do you guys just want to like take it and make a video out of it? So we've been super fortunate in like working with a lot of I feel like we have a lot of good like creative karma from like housing touring bands or like, you know, helping people book shows, and it comes back in our way, like with people offering to do like free photography or free videos, and we do pay artists as well, like when we go to hire someone. But we've had a lot of people who are kind enough to say like, hey, I just want to be part of this, and I'm willing to just hand you something that's already done, which has been super cool. So
yeah, that's awesome. So coming up, what led you to this style of music, the, you know, kind of like the post-punkish, emo-like sound?
So I think we kind of all grew up in the, like, early 2000s emo, pop-punk kind of, you know, umbrella of, like, you know, like My Chemical Romance, Taking Back Sunday, Used, like, Blink-182, Green Day, like, all of that just kind of, like, more mainstream punk emo stuff, and we were all, you know, big fans of like the 90s grunge stuff, like Nirvana, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, all of those bands as well. And then I'd say like individually we all have very distinct tastes when it comes to stuff outside of that range, because you know, we all have, like, in the Venn diagram I think there's a lot more outside of that than would be like connected for all three of us, because like I listen to a lot more like indie alternative stuff, you know. I would say Sean's more into like, what would you say?
I listen to everything.
Yeah,
but yeah, but like we all have like pretty broad ranges, but we all like meet in the middle with stuff. Like I think that what like really pushed me in the direction of our sound is I watched some bands that like I really enjoyed their live performances, like 21 Pilots and then 1975, and I was like, okay, if this is like kind of the energy I want my music to have, it needs to take a certain shape. And my two favorite bands growing up were Nirvana and My Chemical Romance, and I think that like we definitely wear our inspirations on our sleeves, but like instead of like just sounding like Nirvana, it's kind of like, what if Nirvana wrote an emo song, or what if My Chemical Romance wrote a grunge song? And there's a lot of like overlap with other bands too that have inspired us. But the cool thing is like nobody really puts anything on like in the van, and everybody like was like, oh my God, can we turn this off? Like you, unless we had a really rough couple of days, but for the most part, everybody listens to kind of everything. So like our like influences come from, you know, like Tool, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, you know, like I listen to a lot of emo rap, Dylan listens to a lot of bluegrass, like we're all over the place, and we kind of just like just pick and choose stuff.
Yeah, you guys definitely have like a
is weird.
I mean, that's a good thing though, like better than just pigeonholing yourself to one style of music. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you guys is definitely, your sound definitely has like a very upbeat, but it does remind me a lot of like you guys said, like post-hardcore kind of emo type of stuff in the early 2000s, like Senses Fail would have been another one that I would have said. And
I thought like From Autumn to Ashes guitar wise kind of sounded like that.
Oh, cool. I'm not familiar. I'll have to check them out.
See, that's what's cool is like, maybe you guys, the bands both listen to the same and then type of music, and then you kind of come out sounding similar and not even fucking listening to the band. I think that's cool.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We actually saw Senses Fail, Southpaw opened for them.
Oh, nice.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. Was that on the I never remember the name of that band. What band is Kellen Quinn in?
Sleeping with Sirens.
Was that the Sleeping?
No,
with
this
Sirens?
Was at the Stash in Grand Rapids.
Okay.
If you remember that show.
Yeah. No, but that's really cool. I mean, that's probably been one of the more fun things of like interacting with people who've taken the time to listen to our music. It's like, I feel like we get a few like typical ones like The Used or My Chem or Nirvana, and then usually there's always like someone throws in like a Thursday or like a you know, Senses Fail or something that we might not be like as familiar with. Yeah. And then it's always exciting for me to go listen to those bands and be like, oh, okay, I kind of hear it here or whatever.
Yeah, there's
when we started,
there was like a
was
whole
like,
mess of that stuff in the early 2000s. I mean, like they were everywhere. Silverstein, Chiodos, like it was like a good like 5 to 8 year span where all those bands kind of had the same sound, but in their own way, they had their own sound as well. Like you could, they were distinctive from each other, but same style of music for sure.
Yeah, I remember we played. We played the SJC. What was the
Vans SJC showcase?
Yeah. And afterwards, the owner of SJC, Mike, came up to us and he was like, "Yo, have you ever listened to this band? Like, you guys sound exactly like them." And it was like this band from like '98 that had one album out, and we were like, "Oh, cool!" Like, most people have never heard of this band before, But yeah, we did sound a lot like this band, and we were just like, oh, cool. Like, there's so many just like weird, one-off bands from that era that we can get compared to that I'm always stoked to hear. So
it's cool. It's always like accidental too. Like, I'll come into rehearsal with a new song or something, and people be like, wow, this is like different from what we normally do, but like still rooted in like the Anti-Ghost sound. And be like, yeah, I just learned a Eric Clapton song that inspired like this fast punk thing, or like listening to like Have a Nice Life and then being like, cool, how can we like get this emotion but through like our sound? So it's always cool to hear like where it comes from.
Yeah, I like that you guys have a wide musical palette. That's something we're both like that too. Everything is all, you know, we give a chance at least, you know what I mean?
Yeah, especially with like the guests that y'all have had on, kind of like range in a lot of different genres. And that's one of the things that like Tristan was telling me about the podcast. He was like, they'll probably have you guys on. I was like, okay, sick.
Yeah, like he had mentioned you guys before, like a while ago. Like I talked about it before we started, but he brought you guys up to me probably 2 years ago, I want to say now. So I was aware of the band, but then, like, you know, we get busy in between the store and the podcast and whatever. I just, you know, it slips your mind. But I was glad that you guys reached out because I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Tristan's roommate has a band. And typically, like, this sound and era of stuff is not something I'm always listening to. But when I went and started listening to you guys' record, like, in its entirety, I was like, oh, you know, this reminds me of this band, and this reminds me of this band. So I, like, started going back on a rabbit hole back to, like, junior high and stuff, to where I was like, I haven't heard this in forever and this in forever. But I actually really enjoy the record. Like, I wasn't, like, in love with it at first, and then it grew on me where I was like, you know, this is actually pretty good.
Ah, thank you.
I appreciate it.
And that's nothing, like, I'm not trying to say anything against you guys whatsoever. Yeah. Like, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. It was just, like, not what I was looking to hear at the time. But then the more I played it, I was jamming it last night and this morning and stuff. And I played it in the record store earlier. And there were people in here that were like, oh, who's this? And, you know, so that was cool.
Hell yeah. Thanks, bud. Awesome. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, like, I tell people all the time, because I have family members, you know, who love and want to support the band. And, you know, I'm fully aware that it's not always everyone's taste in music. So, like, I'm the first to say, like, hey, you know, you want to buy a shirt or something, that's fine. You don't have to come to a show. Like, you don't have to listen to us constantly. Like, you know, we are not everyone's cup of tea, for sure. It's because we're trying to make something that you know, is unique. So we know that it's not Taylor Swift, right? It's not gonna reach everybody in the same way. So whenever someone listens to us for the first time, like, I'm never offended if they're like, yeah, it's not really what I usually listen to, because you can't be perfect for everybody.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, everybody's gonna be into this, that, and the other, and it might not be. But I always try to, like, at least give something a shot to where I'm like, well, let's see. Like, you never know. It could be my next favorite thing, or I could hate it.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
I could just be meat in the middle somewhere, and I don't love it at first, and then it grows on you. I mean, I've had stuff that I heard, like, years and years before, went back and listened to it down the road and didn't like it in the beginning and then loved it later on.
That just happened with me with, I think when I was like 13, I listened to Turn on the Bright Lights by Interpol.
Yeah.
And absolutely hated it. I was like, this record sucks.
It's so good.
That's not my cup.
I was 13 and I was like, this album sucks. It's boring.
It's like,
his voice sounds weird.
It's like modern Joy Division.
It's not my thing.
Oh yeah, that's a good way.
But you love Joy Division. I'm surprised.
I think that is, like, as a band though, that's like all we can ask is, like, hey, if you take the time to check it out, like watch a video or listen to a song, like, that, you know, that means the world to us, especially in a day and age where, like, we're competing with not just other bands, but, you know, TikTok and streaming, and there's shows and there's podcasts, you know, there's so much media to consume. So if someone takes the time to check us out, like, that's awesome. And when we play shows, like, the way we kind of approach everything is, like, we're just going to go as hard as we possibly can. And if people don't like it, you know, they might not like it, but people are going to remember our set, whether they liked it or not. So we try to at least be, like, entertaining in that way, because we take our, you know, our jobs, like, super seriously, but we also have a ton of fun doing it. So,
yeah, everybody will always remember kind of the band that had fun playing. Like,
yeah.
Nobody wants to watch the band that's up there, like, fucking play the solo, right, you piece of shit, arguing with each other and stuff. Like, they want to watch people that look like they enjoy what they're doing, because then it makes everybody else enjoy it just as much.
Yeah.
Instead of feeling, I mean, like, is this guy going to hit this guy or whatever? And, you know, that might be entertaining on its own, but
that's what I noticed about the video, even, is, like, immediately you guys are jumping around, spinning, craziness. Definitely cool.
No, I mean, we had our friend Tyler Conway filled in on bass for us for one tour, and we were getting up for our first performance together, and he was super, super nervous, and he was like, you know, like, I'm really hoping I can remember everything, like, hit all the notes. And I was like, dude, no one comes to an Anti-Ghost show to see us hit all of the correct notes.
Right.
they come to see us throw ourselves around on stage and just, like, go absolutely wild. So I was like, if you miss a couple notes, that's fine, just, like, look like you're having the time of your life doing it.
Yeah.
So
playing the best you can doesn't mean playing perfectly.
Yeah,
it just means, you know. And, like, the other thing too is, like, how can I expect people in a crowd to, like, mosh or, like, you know, bob their head back and forth or, like, get into it if I'm not into it, you know?
Yeah,
and not
sure.
Saying that everybody needs to, like, thrash around on stage, but, like you were saying, like, you can tell when a band is not enjoying what they do, and you can tell when a band is. And it's, you know, our favorite thing in the world is performing, so I feel like we're always authentic in that way, for sure.
Yeah, nobody wants to, like, watch the guy that looks like he's working the worst job ever on stage to where he's just like, man, I can't wait to get the fuck out of here.
Oh yeah.
So when you guys are, you're talking about touring, do you have an upcoming tour? Do you just get off a tour? What's your summer look like?
There's, like, a little mini tour in April coming up, it looks like.
Yeah, we got a little run coming up in April, just, like, hitting around some spots in the Midwest that we like to play at, like Madison and Chicago, Columbus, a few Michigan dates and Ohio dates and stuff. And then, yeah, we're just going to continue to book out throughout the summer. I don't know when this comes out, but I'm just going to say it anyways. We're going to be playing Pugfest this summer, the Pleasant Underground Festival that's taking place in Ferndale. We aren't announced on it yet, but I'm assuming by the time this comes out, we'll be fine.
Right on.
Yeah, you should be fine.
I mean, even
to be honest, I don't even know when this is going to come out, so I can't give you a straight answer.
That's fair.
But I mean, even if we
it'd be a couple weeks out, I know that for sure.
it's a not very well kept secret that we're on PugFest.
Yeah,
so.
I think most people know, but yeah. So I mean, we book a lot, like we play a lot, we tour a lot. So we're kind of balancing a little bit of time off, you know, here and there in between larger runs, with being in the studio. We're working on some demos for the next record. Trying to get those like ship shape before we hit the studio and actually record the damn thing. So yeah, busy, but you know, we usually have a lot of different coals in the fire.
You guys are living the fucking dream.
Yeah. we're staying busy for sure. Yeah.
I mean, that's great.
That was gonna be another thing I was gonna ask after that, is if you have another record that you're working on or not, because your last one, All My Friends Dig Graves, was done 2022, if I have that correct.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
we have a very, I think, unique song. I don't know if it's super unique. I don't know really how other bands go about the writing process, but chances are by the time an album is recorded and released for us, we have the next album like almost done.
We're constantly writing.
Yeah, we're constantly writing, constantly working on stuff. Like, you know, if there's a song that we really like but it doesn't really have a spot on the record we're currently working on, you know, sometimes we'll push that off to the next record and then be like, all right, we'll come back to this at a different time.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're constantly writing and working on stuff. And...
Well, I think I do that more so out of like insecurity. Like, I'm terrified of the day where I wake up and I like don't have a song to write anymore. So I feel like I can't like feel like a record is finished until I have like an almost completed idea of what the next one's going to look like. And the way that we write songs is kind of just like, I usually write them on my own and like figure out how I want it to go, like structure and melody and stuff, and then bring it to the band. And Andrew and Dylan like finish my thought and they like really bring it to life. And I feel like the more I'm writing, the more I'm like throwing at them, the harder it is to like have a cohesive voice. So I try not to bring something to them until I feel like I've really got something good. And I feel like this new record that we're currently working on is like the strongest that we've had in like our vision. And like, as a unit, we've been like really, really going over like every little detail, like as a group. And it feels really good to do it that way.
Yeah. 2 years is a long time. I mean, it's a lot of touring, a lot of playing. So I'd imagine you guys have gotten a lot tighter or you have different ideas, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think COVID really took the wind out of a lot of people's
sails.
Oh,
yeah, definitely. But I think now it just comes back twice as hard.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of what we're feeling. Like, I feel like this year is when we kind of, like, not to say we weren't, like, playing shows and stuff, but this is the first year where we felt like, instead of, like, clawing tooth and nail to be seen and to get people to come to shows, this is the first year where we've, like, been experiencing more growth instead of just like going back to the usual, but like we feel like we have momentum again, which is really cool and it's making us really excited.
So you guys' shows, is there a lot of bands out that are kind of in your vein of music as well around Michigan? Because I'm not super familiar with most of them, or even just in the Midwest area in general.
Yeah, I was never really into that scene either.
I feel like we end up playing a lot of shows where there's a lot of bands that sound similar in our genre, but not quite what we do. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of like Midwest emo bands like that are like a little bit more like upbeat, twinkly, like very guitar, like tapping heavy. And then also we play with a lot of like metal bands and stuff on that side of the spectrum. So
that's cool.
So it's kind of like a mixed bag of shows then.
That's the way to do it, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool that we kind of fall in this in between spot where we can play with a pop group that like plays just like super upbeat, like not heavy at all music. And then we can also play with like a deathcore band, and we've, somehow fit on both of those bills, you know? So
yeah, our music great. Is like, yeah, it can get really heavy. It can also get like kind of like melodic and poppy in some areas. So I feel like we fit with a lot of people. I wouldn't say there's a ton of bands that sound like us in the scene. Like everyone's kind of doing their own thing, but everyone's rooted in just like rock. So like, you know, there's some really good bands that are more like garage rock, and then there's other ones that are like more Midwest emo rock or like old school like hardcore punk. And like we are in a super fortunate position to be able to like play with all of them, just because I feel like our style kind of goes into it dips into different genres.
Oh, definitely.
At different times,
like so. Ryan said earlier, it's not my style of music whatsoever, but I kept listening, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Thank you.
How long have you been with the guy we're not talking to, your bass player?
Andrew joined in November of 23, I believe. Does that sound about right?
23? Wouldn't it have been 22?
Yes.
Yeah, I was just going to say, he moved into my house, I think.
No, you're right.
Yeah, so he's been, yeah, since November of 22. And we, same kind of deal, we like held auditions, because Dylan and I have been like the founding members, if you will, and we've just kind of had a rotating door basis, and he was the first one to come in and like really be dedicated to like, you know, touring as much as we need to tour, and really like focusing on playing the best he can and like having the style and energy to his playing that really made sense for the band. And he's just been fantastic. Like
we
love having him in as a performer, but like we also all get along super well, yeah. Which is so important.
Yeah, if it's once it becomes business, then what the fuck's the point, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, we're a lot of people don't consider that 90% of being in a band is not the music part of it. It's yeah. The driving and rehearsing and like,
yeah, you guys know what your butt smell like, eating. Socks, fucking,
yeah, dude.
Like all.
I mean, we live in a
stuff.
Van. We live in a van together for weeks at a time, where you know we get absolutely no personal space. If there's even like a little bit of I don't like this person, it's gonna be miserable, you know. So
yeah. For sure.
Not to say that it's all sunshine and rainbows.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's plenty of times where like. Usually we're pretty good about knowing of like, okay, he's in a bad mood, or he didn't sleep last night, or he's stressed about the car or whatever. It's like, let's give this person some space and let's go do our thing. But we're really good about like keeping each other entertained. And thankfully we're all like pretty much into the same stuff. So when we go on tour and we're like hitting up record shops and like comic book stores and trading card stores and stuff, you know, we all enjoy doing those things. So it's like, it's never like one person's the odd man out, like sitting in the car waiting for Dylan and I to finish looking at something.
You don't want to be like Lars and James and he's like the Newstead over in the fucking corner. Like
I would think food would be like the main discrepancy on tour, because like everybody always likes different shit.
Yeah.
So you'd be at like three different restaurants all the time.
But I don't think you can be that picky.
That's more of it, is like, yeah. When you're on tour, you're kind of just taking what you can get. Like we don't really go to like restaurants or like go out to eat much on tour. Like if you get Taco Bell while you're on the road, like that's gold.
That's
like
awesome.
That's an opulent night for us.
Taco Bell sponsor us.
Yes, please.
Do you guys
you guys know who NoFX is?
Cool.
You guys ever read that their book? Or was
no,
it like bathtub?
I didn't know they had a book.
It's the hepatitis
bathtub. And read that. It's
okay, I'm gonna check that out. Yeah, I read a lot of music biographies, so
that has some good tour stories in it. That you know,
I can imagine.
You guys are like angels, I'd assume, compared to the shit in this book. Definitely read that if you get a hankering for some interesting stuff.
Cool.
Oh yeah,
I've burned through a lot of biographies, so I'll have to check that one out for sure.
Yeah, we do too.
you guys' last record that you did, before I ask just about like the recording process and stuff, what is the album cover? Like, I can see that it looks like an octopus tentacle or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's a
why is it,
was it done
inside
by Chris
of a there's like incremental like measurings on the side. Is it a beaker or something?
It's a mason jar.
It's a mason
jar.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah, so it was done by Chris Herman. I sent him the album. I didn't give him any like imagery or colors, or I just said like listen to it and come back to me with some ideas. And he went and did a whole photo shoot. And it was with octopus tentacle in a mason jar, and he had these cool like reflective I don't know what they would be called, but like reflective sheets that he set up all around and had all these crazy lights and stuff. And he sent us probably like 80 photos. And that's the one that I thought was the most visually striking. And I imagined if I was a kid in a record store and I saw that, I would probably pick it up and look at it. So,
yeah, no, it is really cool. I was staring at it. And like the more you look at it, I was like, oh, I see that there's measurements on the side.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I didn't notice that at all at first.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of just a right place, right time thing where he came to us with that, and we were like, that's it, cool. Like, we were really stoked on the concept, and, you know, we want to kind of give him the creative space to do whatever he wanted, and he kind of blew it out of the water. So shout out to Chris.
Yeah, all the artwork we had done on our previous releases too had been digital, and I don't regret any of them. I think they all turned out great, but I kind of wanted to move more into... I felt like that the last record was a huge step forward for us, and I wanted to do something different, so we went with a photo instead, and that's what Chris came up with.
So it's a real octopus tentacle then?
Yeah. It is a real octopus bought from...
Purchased from an Asian mart, right?
Yes.
I think.
Is it? Wait, no, it's a squid, isn't it?
No, it's an octopus. It's an octopus? Yeah, it's an octopus.
Potato, potato.
It's a thing, but...
I don't know. I don't remember what the difference between squid and octopus is. Isn't it like they have like one less set of legs or something?
Yeah,
their heads
squid
are
has
somehow
six
differently.
Legs.
A squid would be way bigger, I think.
Yeah.
You can have small octopi, but...
You can have small squids, too.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Yeah, but
I don't think
let's get into
giant,
this.
Giant
let's spend 20
too.
Minutes talking about yeah. the difference between squids and octopuses.
Yeah,
let's
this
pull
is
up
an animal,
animal planet thing.
Yeah.
but the record itself sounds great. I mean, did you guys... You mentioned somebody that you recorded with earlier. Did you use the same guy for that album, or did you do it all yourselves?
Yeah, we've recorded all of our records at Radon Studio with Mark Stewart. So that's actually where the first EP was recorded with him. Sean and Mark worked closely together doing that. And
he's been like the fourth member of our band.
Yeah.
He really has like a huge hand in like shaping the sound, and he likes things to be very like or at least in the past very like methodically done and like very polished, and I like things that are like really raw and, you know, have a lot of mistakes and stuff. So I feel like he reins me in and I kind of convince him to go a little more on the raw side, and we meet in this beautiful middle ground. But we've grown with that studio. Like, that studio is where we've gone for every record, and the first one we made in a college dorm room, the second one we made in his basement, and the third and fourth record were both done in a studio. But interestingly enough, halfway through the recording process is actually when COVID hit, and they did like the very first lockdown. So everything closed. So everything's done in Radon Studio except for the guitars were recorded during quarantine in my basement.
Okay. Do you guys have plans to try to pitch that to labels at all, or are you just running solo with it for now?
I mean, for the next record, we're definitely interested in doing some pitching and, you know, reaching out to some people and kind of seeing where it goes, but it's just kind of we're gonna record it, we're gonna put it out no matter what. So yeah, like I said, we're gonna see where it goes and see where it takes us, but you know,
yeah,
we're always gonna try our hardest to give it the best shot possible.
Yeah, the last record we did pitch, but It was at the worst time possible in the world time, for any label to try to take a chance on a new band when, right, you know, nobody was making money on the road and giant artists were losing stuff on tours and stuff. So hopefully this time around we have better luck. But yeah, we're gonna try to shop it around. But if not, we'll probably put it out ourselves and tour the fuck out of it and see what the next one brings. But yeah, we're hoping to hear back from some people.
Right on.
I don't see how you couldn't, man. Like, from a listening standpoint, it fucking sounds great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, we're hoping for the best.
I mean, it sounds pro. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that, like, appeals to a larger audience rather than, like...
Definitely.
I could see it being harder for, like, a death metal band to try to release... you know, the next version of Hammer Smashed Face, and it like
for sure. Yeah, for sure.
And it like pitched to a wide audience because it's going to have a niche market, whereas like, you know, you could put you guys' songs on like a sort of punk rock station or something like that to where it would blend in well, and you know, like there's not all these like death metal stations out there, so I think it,
yeah,
it works in your favor that it appeals to a larger audience. And I mean, like Jeremy said, it has a great sound to it. Like, it sounds really professional. It has good energy to it. If I can catch you guys live, I would definitely check that out because it sounds and looks like you guys have a lot of fun playing live.
We certainly do. Well, thank you.
Maybe too much fun sometimes.
Appreciate the kind words. And yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, that is the goal. Like, we're not writing songs with the intention of being popular, but like, we do want to do this for a living, you know, and I feel like we're kind of like halfway there currently. So, you know, we want to try to take this to a larger audience and actually be able to pay ourselves and fix our cars when they break.
Right.
So I appreciate you saying so. Cause yeah, we're not one of those bands where like, we feel like it's uncool to like, you know, have a career in music. Like that's what we all want. But at same time, like we don't need to
why,
be...
I don't know why any band would think that. I mean, I know they're out there and there are people that are like, fuck that, I'm doing it this way. And that's the only way. And that's fine. Do it your way. But like, I mean, you guys are on a good path.
It's like the old,
definitely appeal to a broader audience.
Or having a career and do something
like
you love.
Punk mentality.
Yeah, and like that gets in your way sometimes. Like, you can do everything DIY and kind of like just super raw and whatever, and it might hit, it might not hit. And I mean, you can do stuff the way you guys are doing and it might hit and it might not hit. It's kind of timing and exposure and just consistency and how much you really believe in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we all kind of share the same like core belief of like, you know, it would be awesome to play stadiums or headline, you know, Reading or something like that. But like really all we need to be happy is just like playing clubs to kids who are really passionate about our music. And we always say like we play the same show to 5 people as we do 500. And we would always rather have an audience of, you know, like 100 kids who are really stoked to see us rather than like 2,000 who could give a shit. So
yeah, where they're all there to see like the headlining band and they're just like, fucking get past the openers. We don't give a shit about you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I've been
to
those shows.
Yeah. That's like you said, that's why we play.
Yeah, but the band usually
same
sucks.
Way we to 5 people.
I know. Like, opening bands are like, every time I've been at a show that has like a real long lineup, I always get there early to check out the opening bands because those are the guys that are like trying to prove in a way something, like,
yeah,
and they're hungry still and they're playing like with their whole heart. Whereas like you might have a headliner this is their 40th stop on tour and they're just like, all right, let's get this fucking over with and play to these idiots so I can leave. And like, they don't even put on a good show or like, you know, the opening band, I've seen a lot of times smoke the headliners.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, they're hungrier for sure.
I mean, that's like, it's the difference between watching like college basketball versus the NBA. It's like, I feel like every time I've watched an NBA game, it's like, all right, they're just playing. But like the college players are like, they seem like they have something to prove, you know?
Well, yeah, because they literally do.
I mean, yeah, like, they'll take bigger risks and like, shit.
Where, yeah, in NBA, they're just like, watch me dribble for a $100 million contract.
Yeah.
So we talked about Pugfest earlier. What is Pugfest?
So Pugfest is put on from the Pleasant Underground. They're a DIY booking safe space. They do shows. They book around the entire state and mainly the like Metro Detroit area. They are putting on a festival called Pugfest 2, Welcome to Pugdale, and it's 15-plus venues, 150 bands, live art battle, short film festival, comedy showcases, local vendors. So it's going to be a bunch of like DIY bands from around the Midwest, and then there's some pretty big names on there too, like Belmont, Prince Daddy the Hyena, Retirement Party. So there's going to be like house shows all peppered throughout the city of Ferndale, and then there's going to be like, you know, shows at breweries, shows at the Loving Touch, and then like the art battles and comedy stuff. So you can get a weekend pass and, you know, go see some art, support some local vendors. And the date on that is June 28th through the 30th. And we're going to be playing that with a lot of really great bands and friends. It's going to be a good time.
Awesome. Sounds like a fucking fun thing to check out if you're down in that area for sure.
I'm trying to. Oh, yeah. I was trying to find you guys on the flyer. There's like
they're not on there.
Oh, they're not.
We're not. Yeah, we're not announced.
There's so many bands on there. I'm like reading through.
I think we're coming in the next wave of bands. But I know all those guys pretty well. I don't think they're going to be mad if we break the news here before. Oh. We're giving them plenty of promotion. So.
Yeah, and I mean, what was I going to say?
How they do it every year?
Yeah. They do it every year.
They do it every year.
Shoot.
How long
before
has it been
at the Crowfoot, this is the first year they're doing it like citywide and like incorporating like all types of local art, like with comedy and short films and stuff instead of just music. So it's going to be really cool. And people fly from all over the country for it, which has been awesome. We had some people last year. Yeah. From some crazy faraway places like California and Florida and stuff. So we're anticipating the same thing. It's going to be awesome for the city of Ferndale. It's going to be awesome for the music scene in general. And we're really excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through like their Instagram page, just checking out stuff that they've done in general. I like the name because I have a pug, so that's cool to me. But
yeah, pug. Pleasant Underground is a godsend to the local scene in Metro Detroit, or I mean, just Michigan in general, and yeah, like even extended past that in Midwest. Like, anytime someone messages us and is like, "Hey, I'm trying to book a show in Detroit. Like, is there anyone who can help out?" It's like, "Yep, Pug will. Yeah, 100%. Yeah."
Even like what I always tell people is, even if they can't do it, they will put you in touch with someone who can. Yeah. So there's not a group of kinder, more caring, more passionate, harder working individuals than the people at the Pleasant Underground. My buddy Kyle Minch, and all the people who work with him. We love them very much, and we're excited to be a part of Pugfest and see how it continues to grow, because it's just super cool the way that they give back to the scene, and we're super thankful for it.
It says that they're a nonprofit. Do they like donate proceeds to animal charities or something?
They do charity. They've done a number of charity events, but they don't take any cut for any of the shows that they do. They give it all to the bands. They usually supply, like pizzas for people, and they really, really go out of their way to make it a safe space for everybody, which I think is like the most important part of the shows that they work with. And they do everything from like DIY basement shows to like booking shows, you know, at venues like the Sanctuary and the Loving Touch. And one of the things that we do with them every year is the Painfully 90s show, which is like a cover show where we have a bunch of local bands come out and do, you know, a cover set of their favorite band from the 90s. So we've had some bands do Green Day, you know, doing like the Dookie album, or doing, you know, Soundgarden. We've done Nirvana in the past. We've done Alice in Chains. So they do, they really have their hand in like so many different aspects of the scene. It's super awesome.
That's cool. So there was a video on you guys' Instagram. Oh, I see it now. There's a wrestling ring there. I was going to say, what's up with
this? Oh, yeah.
What's up with this dude, like, these two guys wrestling at your merch table?
So we played a show in, first off, shout out to the Pittsburgh music scene, because they are crazy.
I love Pittsburgh.
So we had played a venue a couple times in Pittsburgh, and we were going back and trying to book a show, and the venue we had played at wasn't available. So, but the guy who was booking it was like, so we can't get this venue, but we do have another one that's available. It is a wrestling ring. And so you're going to be playing, dude, and then totally in between the sets, in between the sets, there's going to be like
amateur wrestlers
so that will just like do
really quick. I just want to specify. So this isn't like the WWE type of wrestling. Like it's like the guys who they're like, it's all scripted and stuff, and it's, you know, air quotes fake, but they're like really injuring themselves.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
More because it's like underground, so they're trying to make a name for themselves, so it gets crazy,
so it gets hardcore as fuck. Are they doing like, oh, just, yeah, mad suplexes,
sure,
and, oh yeah, dude, I'm watching,
yes,
it now,
yeah.
No,
they're like
everywhere,
they're
dude.
Going they're going for it,
dude, right,
but,
on the merch,
so yeah,
table,
we showed,
yeah,
up.
Yo, bleeding, sweating on my t-shirts, so, what the fuck.
It, well,
in the
at
middle
first,
of
like,
the
when
show,
I seen the video, I didn't see the wrestling ring, so I'm like, what happened? Like, did they just, these two guys showed up in their underwear, and they're like, yep, we're here to fucking wrestle.
It was so basically a show that we booked, and they were like, we no longer have a venue for, we can put it in this venue, but there's a wrestling show happening that night. So the kind of like workaround that they worked out with the venue was like, you can still do the show, we can still do the wrestling, and we're just going to go back and forth, band, wrestling match, band, wrestling match.
That's fucking
so
sick.
As you climbed up the lineup and got closer to the headliner, the wrestling also got better and better.
That's actually a really cool idea,
yeah,
for a show, to be
like
honest,
yeah,
with you.
That could be a whole fucking thing.
Yeah, because there's people out there that like adore
so cool
wrestling.
Fuck,
that,
yeah,
would go. Like,
oh,
if you,
yeah,
mixed like, you know, different types of hardcore metal punk bands with in between wrestling matches, that could be like a whole new festival.
You guys know like God's Hate, right? Heard of God's Hate?
The name sounds super familiar.
They're it's like it's a hard straight edge hardcore band, but their singer is a wrestler.
Oh, he is.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that.
A little crossover.
Yeah, I don't know him.
How did we get that video? Were you filming, Dylan?
That, I think that was Andrew.
I think, or maybe someone sent it to us.
It looks like somebody was like on the side of the merch table. Because you can see a bunch of people in like anti-ghost shirts and stuff like up front. And then the dude gets his head hit like on the merch table.
Yeah, okay. We should explain for the listeners what actually happens in the video.
So it was in the middle of one of the matches. They like got out of the ring and were like wrestling in the crowd and stuff and doing like crowd work, and it was really cool. And then one of the dudes grabs the other one and like grabs him by the back of the head and slams him into our merch table on top of our merch, like head into one of our t-shirts.
I think he screamed like, "You want a shirt?" or something,
yeah,
like that, and then threw him down. Because I remember I don't know what I was doing, but I wasn't in the venue, and I came back and people were like, "You're not going to believe what happened." And then I was asking people about it, and someone was like, "I got it on video." So
yeah,
it's, you can go to at Anti-Ghost Music on Instagram, and if you scroll down far enough, you'll see,
yeah,
it's the only guy in like tighty whiteys on our timeline.
Because you can hear someone after he gets slammed, someone just goes, "Not the merch."
Yeah, I think even like the caption for it says "Not the merch."
I was a little disappointed he didn't just get like suplexed
through the table. Yeah, that's
like
what,
on
that
top of our
sweet
merch. That would be so fun. Like, I would have been a little upset because I was like, "Damn, dude, that's my shit." But it would have been so funny.
Yeah, I think
it
that would have been. I mean, people would remember that shit. Like,
just
the
definitely
wrestling show in general, I remember. But having somebody, yeah, pick you up and slam you through a table, like, they'd be like,
that's
the band that got their merch destroyed by a fat sweaty, yeah, guy.
Right.
Definitely one of the most memorable shows we've ever played, and we've played a lot. So
for sure.
Yeah, I was just scrolling through, like, when I was looking at the Pugfest thing, and I was looking at you guys' previous shows, and I clicked on that video, and I had to ask, because I was like, there's a story here. There has to be.
Yeah, that's insane, yeah, that dude.
I think that was Andrew's second tour with us, right?
I can't remember. That feels like so long ago. Yeah. It might have been.
Yeah, it was dated. The video was like March of last year, so it was a while
ago. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it probably would have been his second or third run. Yeah,
I remember he was pretty fresh, and I was like, Andrew, I promise it's not always like this. Yeah, like
trying to be like, this is not the norm. Trust me.
And he quits the band. He's like, damn it, it's not the norm.
He quits to become a wrestler.
Yeah.
That is oddly not the first show that we've been offered with wrestling. I think we had three other shows that were supposed to be like the same thing, where it was like band wrestling event. And all of them like fell through. I think like we had like time commitments, or like the show got canceled. So that's the first one we actually did. But it happens surprisingly more often than you would think.
Yeah, I would think not more than once, really. Like, yeah. That's, but I mean, I guess like if that's an area that has wrestling going on, but they're also allowing bands. It's cool that they allow both, though, because a lot of places would be like, well, I already have this event pre-existing, so, you know, we're not going to tie in this with this, but, I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Like, people like wrestling, people like music.
I think it's a cool idea to, like, mix arts like that a little bit more, because, you know, I might be stretching a little bit calling...
No,
wrestling and art, but I, you know, like it is like a physical art of like throwing yourself around like that.
And
but.
It's a form of entertainment. Yeah. I mean, I was going to say the same thing. It's so hard to get anyone to pay attention to what you're trying to do nowadays.
Yeah.
And like trying to have your passion project become your career is so difficult to get eyes on it. So like, I always tell people like, go out of your way to support local art. Like it doesn't even have to be us or our band, but like support some local band, support some local filmmaker or, you know, comedian or, you know, painter or, you know, someone who's trying to get involved in fashion. Like we're all like trying, like the world needs people creating art just as much as it needs anything else. So like go out of your way to support those people, because odds are they're starving and working their butts off and like
support,
you know,
your local record stores, motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 100%.
Seriously, they're providing a service. Like y'all are providing a service. Like, you know, I tell people the same thing about like fucking comic book stores or like local video game stores. Like, I don't want to see a Starbucks and a GameStop. I would rather see like a mom and pop coffee store and, you know, retro games or whatever. Like that's the world that I want to live in, and that's what we try to practice what we preach and do the same in supporting that, you know. So
well, yeah, because when you go to like a chain comic store, if there's even any left, actually, because I think most of them are pretty much mom and pop shops at this point, but like coffee store
like
would
Barnes
be a better example.
Maybe you'd have comics.
I don't know if they sell comics, but
they do now. They do like a whole like manga section and stuff.
Oh, okay. But you go to
the
like a coffee
Ito
shop
books
or whatever, like Starbucks don't give a fuck about your like $5 to $20 purchase. But like,
yeah,
that independent right. store, like that could have been all the money they made all day. Some days, you know,
exactly.
Like it happens. Like I've got days at the record store where I make $5. I've got days where I make $5,000. I've got days where I make nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure y'all see the effects of like Amazon and stuff, because like it's convenient like that. It nobody wants to leave the house anymore. You can just sit and go, oh, I need this new record's coming out. I'm just gonna go get the Target. You know,
I printed a sign at one point to put in the store that I never did, just because I didn't feel like arguing with people. But the sign said, if you are saying to yourself, I can get this on Amazon, you're part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but yep. There was like so many people that were just like,
dude, that'd be over so many
it.
Fucking
I know
heads
they wouldn't
too.
They wouldn't
like,
get it like
what
so because I can't tell you how many times like I'll be, you know, you overhear people talking in the store or whatever, and they pick up a record and they're like, oh, $28, and then they're like, oh, I can get it on Amazon for $26. I'm like, yeah, but it's in your hand right now and it's $2
yeah.
difference. Like I can understand if it's like $200 and you can get it for $20 or whatever, like, sure, I get it.
Oh, yeah.
Go for it. But if it's like a couple dollars, like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a really awesome music store by us called Huber Breeze, and like their guitar prices are like, whenever I'm at their store and I like see a guitar, like I'm like, oh, like I'll check out, like, see if there's other colors online, and like, yeah, I could go to Guitar Center and get a used one for, you know, $30 cheaper or whatever. And this only happened one time because I don't buy guitars every other week. Right. But like, I was like, no, I'd rather support, you know, the store that is owned by a dude where I know his first name and he recognizes me from last time I came in and stuff like that.
Yeah. So you don't feel like an unwelcomed customer, because like a corporation doesn't, I mean, they don't know your name.
They don't know
your preferences. They don't know, like, you know, you come into like a record store, a musical instrument store, like, and you're a regular, like, that guy or girl or whatever who owns it might be like, oh, I found this, thought you might be into it, check it out, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get that when you go to, like, a corporate store.
Mm-hmm. We used to walk up to the local, we have a local video game store, Chaotic Games, and, yeah, I used to walk up there with my son, fuck it, like, once a week, and that got to where, like Ryan's saying, he just, like, he knew, like, oh, I got this, and if you're interested or that, and, like, he just knew we were looking for these types of, you know, games or whatever it was at the time, you know? So
yeah, it's like a sense of community.
Definitely. Yeah. And, yeah, if you guys ever vacation up here, you know, we'll show you around.
Oh, yeah, I would love that.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
But, I mean, yeah, we're, like, big into, like, trading card games, and, you know, it's really cool. Like, you could probably go online and get, you know, whatever you're ordering for super cheap and, you know, not have to leave the house and just like do it super easy. But I love the experience of like going into a card shop and like talking to the employees and, you know, like I remember ordering a deck once and I went to pick it up and the guy there was like, oh, dude, like this, I can like tell what deck you're building because of the cards you ordered. So
and then
I
just nerd out.
You get these. Yeah. He just nerded out at me for like 20 minutes and like basically rebuilt my entire deck like in front of me, and then I was like, sick, like this is so much better than it would have been otherwise. And like that dude knew me from the previous time that I was in
from the last deck he bought.
So
yeah, I love those like little interactions you get to have when you get to like go to a local record shop or a local card shop or a comic book store or video game you know.
Yeah, we got really into Magic the Gathering over the pandemic, and I'm not kidding you. Like I won't name the stores but there are two stores by us where we've had like bad interactions with the owners, not us personally, but like we've just seen the way the owners have like treated their employees and other customers. And like we drive 30 minutes out of our way to go to a different game store because the people there are so friendly, and like to be honest, their prices are worse than the other two, but like I would rather spend my money, you know, especially if it's only like a dollar difference or whatever, supporting that place where like I feel safe and I know the employees are treated well and everyone's really friendly, because like those are the people I want to be going out of my way to support rather than just whoever has the cheapest product I'm looking for.
Yeah, I mean, you sell yourself in business along with your product. And I think some people make the mistake of like, oh, they're going to buy it or they're not going to buy it. Like, no, like you could be the deciding factor that makes them buy it or not. Like if you come off as some condescending asshole, they're going to be like, yeah, I'm not going to buy from this guy. But you never know. They could have been on the fence and you could have been like super encouraging or whatever the case may be. And like you made that sale just based off of personality.
Yeah, and you also have the opportunity to like make someone's day too. I mean, like I think a lot of bands make that mistake, honestly. Like they play their set and they're like, well, if someone's going to buy a shirt, they'll come up to the table. And it's like when they come up to the table, you say like, hey, how's it going? You know, and it's not like, oh, please buy a shirt, please buy a shirt. But interact with them like it's another human being. And I've been to record stores where I've like looked at something and people be like, I don't know why everyone wants this fucking record. And I'm like, cool, now I feel embarrassed and I don't want to buy it.
Yeah.
You know, but like the few occasions where like someone would be like, oh, hey, you're into Mad Season? That's cool, man. How old are you? And I'm like, wow, awesome. Somebody wants to talk to me and not make fun of my fucking music choices. Like, you don't realize like what people are going through in their personal lives and like how much a small interaction like that can really like turn their whole week around.
Fucking A.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we start wrapping things up here, first, do you guys have anything that you guys would like to add?
I guess I would just say, do you want us to like do all of our plugs at the end and stuff?
Nope, you don't even have to do that. It'll all be in the episode description.
Beautiful. Oh.
Sick. Cool.
We make it super I would just easy say... for people to like find and follow you because people are lazy. So like everybody
I
can lo- look.
I actually
just go
like
click.
Doing
I like
part.
It too, but I'm just saying
like we're weird. We like promoting shit.
You know, I want people to find you guys' page and your, you know, different shit like that. So like your Instagram will be in the episode description, like Bandcamp, all that stuff. I'll put it all in there.
Cool. Yeah, I'll just do a quick plug for the video and say my spiel about local art real quick.
I'll
cool.
even put yeah, the video ahead, in there too.
Spiel away.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool. I guess I would just want to say first and foremost, thanks so much for having us on. We really appreciate it. And to anyone listening, if you made it this far, thank you. We're pretty easy to find online. Check out the new video we just dropped for our song Still Alive. And like we kind of talked about in this episode, go out of your way to support local art. Like find a local band that you can get into, or your friend that does comedy, or your cousin who does short films or whatever. Go to your local record store, or your local game store, or your local comic store. Don't go to Amazon or Target or any of those fucking chains. Support local art because this shit's really difficult. It's really expensive, and the people who are doing it because they love it, not because they're trying to get rich off of it. If they're the right kind of people. So support local art and lift each other up. Don't tear each other down.
Also support your local podcast.
Yeah.
Amen.
We should say that more often, but we don't. I got signs and shit in the record store. So
I want to start saying we're the number one podcast in Northern Michigan or Northeastern Michigan. Cause then it's true.
Yeah, there you go.
Because it's, like, the only one?
Well, there's, like, fitness podcasts here that I know about, but I don't think there's any music podcasts that I know of.
Music.
Number one music podcast in Northeast Michigan.
Correct. Yeah. There it is.
That's on our T-shirt.
I am.
You can take that the way, like, radios have, like, yo, this is Eminem, you're listening to blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
We had this band, a local band here, that we were selling their CDs, and my partner at the record store, his sales pitch for the CDs was they're selling more CDs than the Beatles, but we didn't have any Beatles CDs. He would always tell people, like, oh, they sell out more than the Beatles on CD. Like, we got a million records, but, like, we don't have many Beatles CDs. And that's always fair. An ongoing joke.
I actually have a question for both of you, if that's cool.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering if you could, if every person who came into your store went home with this record and listened to it from start to finish, what's the one record you would recommend everybody check out? Aside from Anti-Ghost, All My Friends Dig Graves.
Just in general across all music?
I know it's a really hard question.
That is a really hard question.
Can I ask like a sub question, like, is it going to be like the best representation of us, or do we think that it's the best sounding album, or we think, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, representative of you and like your music taste. Like, what do you think? Like,
don't forget the struggle, don't forget the streets, Warzone, or new school to old school, Warzone, or anything by Warzone, pretty much except that metal.
Yeah,
album.
There you go.
Straight up, like that's easy.
Hell yeah.
Damn, dude, I'd have to, like, really think about this one. But just off the top of my head, like, yeah, that Warzone record's great. But Jeremy's much more fluent in hardcore than I am. Not that I don't listen to it. That's just, like, that's his bag.
Yeah, that's my bag.
I would go, like, more like Nas Illmatic, just because I'm more of, like, a hip-hop person.
Yeah, see, that could be on mine, too, as well. That's a good one.
I
think, like, start to finish, it's like a perfect record.
Ready
and it's an accurate representation of, like, New York at that time. I mean, yeah, Ready to Die could be up there, too, and there's a ton of them. But I was just thinking off the top of my head, but yeah, like I could break that down into like
perfect
metal, jazz, hip hop.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah,
it could be all over.
Yeah,
the place.
That's why we could fill like two more episodes. The specific.
Yeah.
Now you got me. Now you got me thinking about that. I think
because they own and operate a local record store. I'm sure y'all get recommend. I don't know. I feel like.
No,
there
I
might
like,
be times where someone
like
goes for a recommendation.
Because it makes me like dig through my brain of something that if I did get, I have been asked that question in the store before, but or
okay,
something
like recommended,
similar to
that would take me longer to think of. I think.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna check out. I have listened to that Nas record, but I should probably revisit it. But I am gonna check out that Warzone album.
You should probably buy both of those albums. Don't even just. Blind buy them, you're good to go.
There you go.
That's fair.
Mine would probably be.
Before we finish, I know you guys mentioned earlier that you have a pretty diverse musical taste, but we ask everybody this at the end of our episodes. What is something that you listen to that people would not expect or that they don't know that you listen to?
I was terrified you were about to ask the question I just asked.
I feel like my unexpected, like for people who like know me and are around me a lot, like this will not be shocking at all. But for people who just know me as like the drummer in this like post-punk grunge band, it's going to be pretty shocking. But I love like teen girl, like indie pop. Like I'm a huge fan of like Olivia Rodrigo and like Chappell Roan and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
That's what we're looking for.
That's the type of answer we look for in the questions. So.
Like Chappell Roan's new record, Rise and Fall of a Midwest Princess, is it's a banger. It's so good.
The title's awesome.
It's such a good album title, no too. I absolutely, yeah. But it's like, I'm a 25 year old man, but like, I will get down with this.
There's nothing wrong with that at all, dude. I listen to some of that shit too, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think because I feel like it's pretty. I feel like no one would be surprised at what I listen to, but I'll try and get like my biggest like left field answer would probably be I'm a huge Tom Waits fan.
Mm.
Okay.
I feel like that might turn some heads that the pink haired. Screaming guitar player in a grunge band really enjoys Tom Waits. Maybe not. I don't know.
He's definitely an acquired taste. Like him and Nick Cave both are like, they have great songwriting, but I've just never been able to really get into them.
That's totally fair.
We were literally driving home from a show the other day and I was asleep in the back seat and woke up. And Sean was playing Nick Cave, and I like came out of my slumber, and I was like, "What? What is this?"
He said, "This is the Hatman music," because I was playing at Nick Cave in the Bad Seeds album.
Yeah, he had a band before Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds called The Birthday Party. That was like a punk rock kind of band that I like more. But like his solo stuff, on paper. I would love it. Like when you read about it, when you look at it, everything, like it checks all the boxes for me. But then when I listen to it, I'm like, I just can't get into this.
That's fair. I would say, it's Nick Cave, Tom Waits, Leonard Cohen. Those are all artists where like, if I send someone a playlist and they're like, I don't like this, I wouldn't be like, well, why? Why not? It's like,
right.
No, I totally get why people don't like that.
What's your favorite Leonard Cohen album?
Ooh.
Shit, this podcast is going to go on forever.
You're going to have a lot of editing to do.
I'll leave all this shit in. That's stuff people like to know.
Because I love Leonard Cohen.
Yeah, I want to say, well, now my voice is, or my head is stuck in, what's the album that You Want It Darker is off of?
Is the album called You Want It Darker?
Yeah, it is. Okay, I didn't want to say it because I really didn't want to be wrong. Yeah, probably You Want It Darker or Various Positions.
I was going to say Various Positions is...
I'm a songs of love and hate kind of guy.
Oh, okay. Okay. There's really no wrong answer.
No, there isn't. I don't think so either. But like we were saying before, Tom Waits, there's only like a couple of songs I'm even like, okay. But
That's fair. Yeah, he's.
I think he does write great songs though.
Right,
like lyrically, he can, like,
yeah,
you can just
he's a
read
storytelling
it.
Son of a bitch.
He writes some good shit.
He was also the inspiration for Heath Ledger's Joker.
I didn't know that actually.
Yeah, if you watch a Tom Waits interview, the voice is early
gotcha.
Tom Waits, the voice is identical.
Yeah, that makes sense now that you say that.
Yeah.
I'm going to check that out when I go home.
Yeah,
man,
Batman
nerd.
Fucking Batman every episode.
Yeah, Batman somehow sneaks its way into like half of our episodes.
Damn.
I don't know how.
I got to pee again.
I'm a big Batman.
It's nice meeting you guys.
It was so nice meeting you. Thank you so much for having us on. This
yeah,
was a
thank
pleasure.
You guys.
Yeah, absolutely. It was cool to talk to you guys, and I'll be in touch with you on Instagram.
It was awesome meeting you guys.
Yeah, you as well.
Likewise. You guys have a good rest of your week.
You too.
Peace. Bye.